Greetings, fellow conspirators. Gardner Goldsmith here with you, introducing this podcast for, of course, Liberty Conspiracy Audios, found at iTunes and at Podomatic. And please tell your friends about them if you like what we are producing. Want to thank at the outset Gerald and Mike for joining me on this particular podcast. This was one we started to discuss on the radio program and decided to do some overtime and make a completely separate podcast about this particular issue. This issue is licensing. Governments forcing people to accept their conditions and pay a certain amount of money in order to engage in peaceful free enterprise. In other words, no longer free enterprise, in order to engage in enterprise. We start off with a contemporary story out of Los Angeles about Uber and other ride-sharing services that are out there, Uber and Lyft specifically. And I hope you don't mind. In this case, the audio is a little bit funky through Skype with one of our guests, but I thought it was worth producing this and putting it out as a podcast for you, because you can still understand what is said. And I think it's a fun conversation. I think it's fun and enlightening and, you know, educational and things like that. And at the end of the program, I have turned into an audio form an article that I wrote for the Foundation for Economic Education in 2006, and it concerns licensing. And specifically, I was able to take a story that was in the news in New Hampshire and give some national attention to it, and I was really pleased we were able to do that. It's all about a Free State Project member named Mike who decided to give a manicure to a willing participant for a fee, and he did it right on the lawn of the licensing board of cosmetology for the government of the state of New Hampshire. And it was awesome. It was a great, great stunt, and it was educational. It made the lesson about freedom and economics, and it was terrific. So that'll be at the end of this podcast. And again, you know, I hope you don't mind some of the audio funkiness before we get to that point. I really want to thank Mike, and I want to thank Gerald for joining me on the show. And if you want to get involved, just contact me at Gard Goldsmith on Twitter, or you can always go to the Liberty Conspiracy Facebook page until we get the regular LibertyConspiracy.com website back up and running, a little bit more powerful than it was in the past. So thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoy what we're doing, and we'll have another podcast produced very, very soon. Be seeing you. Here it is. It's called Waiters No More from Hollywood Reporter, and it's actually very interesting because it talks about the great opportunities that Uber and Lyft have provided people who are trying to break into acting or screenwriting or some other facet of television or filmmaking in Hollywood. And it kind of starts with the anecdotal. It talks about a guy named Jerry Terhorst, T-E-R-H-O-R-S-T, how he has a Honda Civic, and he earns $25 an hour at least whenever he wants to take a job, and goes out by taking people for rides to the airport or wherever they might go around L.A. He says it's terrific. He says the ability to make money with someone without someone telling you when and where you have to be is amazing. That's another person, Zach Rice, who says this. And they talk about all the different people they meet and so on and so forth. But they are running into a problem. They say it might be too good to last. Local officials, especially those with ties to the taxi and limo business in Los Angeles, have been looking for ways to crack down on ride-sharing companies.
They want that money.
That's right. Money, 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 money. Claiming they're not regulated as closely as other livery companies. And, of course, when we use the term regulation, we mean pushed around by politicians. I love how they use that term regulated. It just sounds so quaint, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it basically just means do as we say, not as we do, just like everything else government
exactly
does.
We want to make sure our friends are in a good position, and we're going to regulate everybody else.
Yeah, just shut up and do what we tell you. And if you do what we tell you, and all the you know, myriad intricacies of the bylaws, then we'll give you the privilege, we'll grant you the privilege of being able to sit there and cut some hair or drive a car.
It's just unbelievable. And I mentioned on Facebook a long time ago, I started a little novella based on a short film idea that I worked on, I just did myself anyway, in college. It was called The Tea Miser. And it was about this guy who comes back to Boston, and he's been in Australia, and he's at Logan Airport, and he's waiting and waiting and waiting because the T subway system isn't working, and he has to get a bus, and he's going to have to get redirected all over the place. And so he, while he's waiting for the bus, this dude pulls up, and he's in a banged-up Toyota Celica, and he's like, "Hey, buddy, you want a ride?" And it's got, you know, Bondo on it and all this stuff. And he's like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, come on, hop in. I don't charge much." And he's like, "Okay." So he gets in, and the guy's got, it's a cab, and it's like gorgeous inside. Beautiful air conditioning, awesome stereo, plus seating. He's got like snacks.
It's like a TARDIS.
Huh?
It's like the TARDIS?
Yeah, it's like the TARDIS. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's bigger,
it's like
on the inside.
Yeah, it's transcendentally, dimensionally transcendental. So he's like, I should put that in the story and give you a plug. I'm like, dude, this is like the TARDIS. But anyway, so the driver's like, he goes, what exactly, the passenger, the T-Miser, his name is Joel Gold. He's like, "What exactly is this?" And he goes, "It's my cab." And he goes, "Cab?" He goes, "You don't even have a license." He goes, "Heck that. Heck the license." He goes, "What, you think I got to pay extortion so I can give somebody a friggin' ride? What, are you kidding me?" He goes, "Well, how come your car looks so nasty?" He goes, "It's the only way to get around Boston. The ugliest car always gets the way." And it's like, oh, yeah, because it's all banged up and stuff, and he'll go flying, and nobody will touch him. You know, they'll be like, "Let that guy through." So anyway, yeah, he gets – in the story, I can't tell you too much, but I have to write it. It'd be fun. He ends up going back to this radio station where he had been working, and while he was away for vacation for 2 weeks, they changed the format to easy listening. Because at that time, Governor Mike Dukakis, he decided that he would give money to stop hard rock from being played because he thought it damaged children and made them angry and violent. So
bastards.
Yeah, it's like a way to placate the masses, you know. So he gets pissed off. He goes back. His girlfriend now works for the T, and she hated the T, and she has sold their car because, again, Mike Dukakis has a special thing where you can get a lifetime T pass if you turn in your used car. So, I came up with this stuff like 15 years ago, and now I'm sitting here like, holy freaking crap, man. If you keep waiting to get this stuff done, events will overtake you. But anyway, to get back to the licensing thing in L.A., do either one of you guys want to describe to the listeners why licensing is such a bad idea?
But if you don't mind cutting for a second, my problem with the licensing thing is, and Mike may have been touching on this, is the fact that you end up with guilds in places, and you have to pay enormous amounts of money to get into their guild. And you know, it's like licensing, you know, $1 million to open a taxi company, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So you can get that little thing on your taxi. And, you know, and that's how they people out of the market that will not ante up, you know? And it's a private guild that they end up forming.
Yeah, so it's like a government-supported oligopoly, similar to the old-style guilds that sprouted up in England and Europe back in the old days. It's just another way to support guildism backed by the state, right, Gerald?
Exactly, and you end up with just people being closed out of, you know, at one time there was only certain people that was allowed to lay brick, you know, and that's why, and now anybody that wants to go down to the hardware store, you can get a little book, learn how to throw some brick together, and you can even go to work for a guy. If you get fast enough, you can go to work. They don't have that kind of, and I know they did that to keep their wages high, because if they were in high demand, then you would have to beg them to get them to come lay some brick. But it's not like that anymore.
Right.
The free market stopped that, you know.
Exactly. And everything from licensing. People look at libertarians when we say, you know, doctors should not be licensed. Electricians should not be licensed. You know, all these different types of things. And they say, what are you, crazy? They just think it would be mayhem. So I look at this as having three facets to it. But before I get to the three facets, I want to turn it back to you, Mike, with any further comments about the concept of licensing. And just to let you know, one of the facets I do look at is the force, the aggression that is applied. And mm-hmm. I think that's usually a good way to start. And then you can look at the implications or the effects, the ramifications or the effects of that type of force.
Well, certainly it keeps, I used to be an old school goth, dude. Mm-hmm. Hair, long black hair down to my waist.
Yeah.
I painted my own nails black.
Right on. Well, and, that's illegal. You can't do that.
And I did a really good job at it. And I painted my friend's nails black. Like, you know, they couldn't handle it on their own.
Yeah.
And I did a good job. Yeah. Like, I mean, I never sought compensation for it. It was just like, hey, we're going to the club. I got nothing to do. Let's have a beer and do a shot, you know, do a tequila shot. And then, like, I'll paint your nails. We'll go down to the club and we'll do all right.
Yep.
I don't see anything wrong with that sort of arrangement. Now, the problem, as you said, comes down to force.
Right.
And I don't care if it's me or some, you know, random person on the street doing it. What it comes down to is, what is it this bureaucrat's business what I do and what my friend values as a skill from me? I might be a nail painter that deserves $1 a hand. Right. I might be a nail painter that deserves $10 a hand or $30 a hand.
Right.
And it's nobody else's business but me and the person that says, hey, I want to paint my nails. I might do it for free, even though I might be a $30 a hand nail painting person.
Exactly.
It's really nobody's business. It's nobody's business.
And I would say, Mike, that it is nobody's business regardless of the degree to which the person who is asking for the service to be done could be harmed, whether it's physical or monetary or emotional or for temporal reasons if they end up having wasted their time. All of those, all the valuations for all those things, physical pain, time, money, all those things are purely subjective valuations. And to have politicians say, okay, well, yeah, maybe we could agree with you on nails because that's innocuous. You know, that's a great example that I think is and I'd like to talk about that a little bit
it's
more because I wrote an article. Yeah, but the principle applies, and it doesn't matter if it's a fingernail brush or a scalpel. If someone is voluntarily asking for someone to give them their services, no one, regardless of how bad the ramifications could be if it were a bad service, no one should be able to stand in that way through the government.
It's a voluntary contract. And
exactly.
Voluntary contracts should only be enforced by the state. If we're forced to suffer with the state, it's the voluntary contract that should be enforced by the state.
Oh,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the terms or anything in there is, and we can go. There's a whole other conversation that we had about what is, you know, voluntary acceptable to be enforced by the state. But at the very least, it's the state. If we're forced to suffer by it, that is its job, is to enforce those contracts.
Right.
If the two participants in that contract, you know, come into, you know, negative standing or whatever, it's the state's job to be the intermediary of that contract. And outside of that, it's none of their business.
And let's add something before I go back over to Gerald. For those people who at first blush are hearing this and for the first time, the idea that if the key contingency there is if we're forced to have to suffer the existence of the state, and there is that term suffer. And what we're saying there is the most fundamental beyond the threshold beyond which the government should not go is in simply enforcing voluntary contracts and disputes. But the point that we need to bring up to take that an extra step, I hope, Mike, you don't mind, is to say that, again, when he says suffer the state, And when he says suffer the state, what we're saying there is in order to enforce those contracts, the payment for the judicial system and the policing to enforce those contracts is taken involuntarily because it is the government. It is the state. If it were voluntary, then there would be private adjudication systems that people could agree to go to or not go to and could pay for or withdraw their money. And that is that's an important point.
I mean, or at least you'd sit there and just kind of like hold your nose and go like, all right, they trust them more than anyone else. Let's just dive in. I mean, like, you know, like it'd be really one of those like literally holding your nose and kind of like, all right, well, this person trusts this government body more than they would trust a private adjudication service, which I don't know why they would.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, you literally have to suffer them.
Right, like, right, right. But, you know, again, that distinction for the listeners, everybody, you know, if you're new to libertarian or, you know, anarcho-capitalists or voluntarist thinking, you know, that distinction is very, very key. There is a marked difference between a government court system where we say, you know, we could potentially say, well, all the government should do is to adjudicate the disputes between people, private actors, and upholding contracts and things like that or punishing fraud. And recognize that even within that system, there is an involuntary actor. That involuntary actor is the taxpayer who has to pay for the adjudication system for everybody else, and potentially for him, but maybe not for him. So this is one of these things that we try to bring up, and we say that there is an alternative, which is purely voluntary systems, pure voluntary adjudication systems, and voluntary societies. But I also wanted to mention, you know, we talk about the force that is applied for the licensing, which is immoral force. But then, as I mentioned also, there is the exclusion of lower cost competitors. As we said, this is a way to exclude people, to only allow a certain pool of people who have passed the test or paid the licensing fee or, you know, taken on the repeated tests that they have to get and paid more money for licensing. So the state makes a bunch of money, and then the people who are in, they exclude other people who might have some lower skills but could offer those lower skills to people who now are going to be completely priced out of the market. Right, guys?
And that to me is the more guard.
Yeah.
Is when you start seeing it's like I remember you saying something about Stockholm syndrome earlier.
Yeah.
And that to me is what this whole licensing thing becomes. Is like, well, I had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they should have to do this. Mm. And I sit there and I go, well, it's not my fault that you're a sucker that believes in like these fake things. Like that's not my problem.
Right.
All I know is that this person is out there trying to deliver a service to their fellow man voluntarily. And now you want to bring guns and cages into the scenario just because they didn't jump through a hoop that you sadly decided to. Like, that's not my... All I know is I get a better value when I'm spending $15 for a cab ride than $30 for a cab ride. And whether or not you decided to get a little piece of paper, that really isn't my concern.
Right, right.
All I know is that as a consumer, I'm at the airport and I have to go to a conference center.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? One of the things that I think is really important to bring up here is, you know, I talked about how I wanted to provide an economic lesson to the listeners and at the beginning of the show. And I think it is extremely important for those people who are new to free market economic thinking to just, you know, always remember that the point of a productive economy is so that consumers can decide what best suits their lives and can get more for their toil, not less. At least that seems to be the trend that I think is observable and seems to drive most economies. And the people providing the products or services will try to provide better quality products at lower prices because there are other people competing for the consumer dollar, competing to attract that consumer psychology to buy their thing rather than the other thing. And so what you get is, in every trend in economics, you get, if you have removed licensing, just like with DVDs or clothing or whatever, you get better quality at lower and lower prices, because that's the trend the suppliers have to follow in order to satisfy the consumer. They have to become more efficient, provide better things, faster service, more quality stuff at a lower price. That is the way it always goes. So if you got rid of licensing and allowed these competitors to come in, even those low-price competitors would eventually get to a point where they are competing with each other on the lower price point, and they are trying to improve their quality and lower their prices. So even for those people who are the poorer people who might get a lower quality product rather than no product, because licensing is removed, they can get a lower quality product for a lower price. Even the quality of that low price point product will start to rise, because those low price people are starting to compete with each other. And that is an extremely important thing. That's why poor people can get decent clothing, because the low price people who aren't licensed can get in and compete with each other, and they can improve their quality too. Am I off base, guys?
I believe that's exactly right. You know, for example, I was watching a documentary, and you know how Detroit really had a really hard time, financially. Mm-hmm. And the businesses there are just crippled with bureaucracy. And this mm-hmm. one guy was saying, he had a restaurant, and he was saying, you know, if it's a fee for this, it's a license for that, it's a license for this, fees on top of fees. You know, if it's money they want, why don't they just come in and I'll write them a damn check, you know? He said, but they nickel and dime me to death, and I just, you know, he said, I wouldn't recommend that anybody get into this business.
Wow. You know, it really does cripple people. Mike, what do you have to say?
You know, I think that, as you're saying, Gard, when, you know, even if you have like a glut of people in, you know, the lower kind of payment strata when it comes to their particular craft, I think what you'll find is the ones that will successfully rise to the next strata in payment are the true entrepreneurs that understand that, you know, you have to save for certain, you know, you have to build capital to, you know, invest in your business. And these are the people that really should truly be rewarded for what they decide to do.
That's a great, great point. No, please continue. I want to mention something about the price for licensing of hot dog vendors in a second in New York City.
No, I mean, that's really all I had to say is that, you know, it's, you know, you can sit there and have, you know, say you have 30 people that charge $10 for, you know, just to go back to the simple, you know, manicure. Mm-hmm. It's the ones that'll sit there. You can sit there and have someone chugging along at just doing their manicures all day. But it's the one that might tuck back like a dollar, you know, 50 cents a manicure.
Yes.
That eventually goes, and then they go out and they buy the next set of tools or sanitizing equipment to make their manicures safer. And they develop the skills to like give a better manicure with safer equipment, and then push themselves into the next strata of manicure, and then compete with maybe
Absolutely.
Something you find in a brick and mortar.
Absolutely. This is excellent. People listening to this, if you want to check out stuff about licensing, I've got an article. In fact, at the end of the podcast, I'll read the article for you. You can go to FEE and look for mine or a bunch of other people's articles on licensing, and you might find them pretty interesting. I think they're good. They're economically sound. And again, the third thing I wanted to bring up, Mike, was and Gerald as well, was the secondary and tertiary consequences of forcing the consumer to have to pay more or just stay out of the market. As you said, we're going to see quality rising with more people going in, but also with more people entering, lowering the price point, what you see are consumers saving money. And that mm-hmm. saved money can be spent on other things where other people could be employed. So
licensing, broken window.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. So licensing not only causes people to pay more, but as a result of the higher prices they have to pay, it damages employment all over, everywhere.
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The economy, you know, as well. I mean, people, you know, down to the finest level, a person that is lower income, they're going to have a higher quality of life if things are cheaper and licensing and all the, you know, the cost of regulation and licensing is just tremendous. It's like over $1 trillion to hit on our economy, you know.
Wow. That's a great point. You know, and that's what it's all about, too, Gerald. It's about people wanting to improve their freaking living standards. This is really straightforward. Guys, let me wrap it up with this. This is a piece from Delish.com, and it came out September 2013. Headline. Here's the newsreader's voice. Headline. Some New York City hot dog vendors pay more than $200,000 for permits by Kiri Tenenbaum. While the typical New York hot dog, good, costs about the same at every street cart, the fees the vendor pays can vary widely. Some pay just a few $1,000s a year, while other vendors pay the city more than $200,000 just to have their carts in the right spots. So again,
that's disgusting.
Yeah, and that brings us to the government ownership of the roads and the sidewalk and who maintains these, you know, what entity will maintain these things very badly. The government basically extorting people to say...
That's what it is. Yes. It's extortion.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, guys, look, thank you so much. I'm going to cut the podcast off and just say goodbye to both you guys on my own and stuff. And the listeners, thank you so much. I'm going to do this licensing thing as a separate podcast, probably put this out before some of the other stuff. So everybody, guys, you want to say be seeing you. Okay, gang, here is the article that I wrote for the Freeman magazine. And it was published April 1st, no joke, 2006, a Foundation for Economic Education. Of course, Sheldon Richman was the editor at the time, and I was so grateful that Sheldon selected this to go into the magazine. It was really nice to see it published, and I really appreciate it because he's one of my big heroes. And so this is a story that actually comes from thanks to the efforts of members of the Free State Project. And in the article is called The Government Licensing Scam. And it goes like this. Last May, a man named Mike Fisher from the town of Newmarket, New Hampshire, performed an act for which he will pay dearly under penalty of law. He engaged in a consensual commercial transaction with another willing individual. He performed a manicure. Mike Fisher, outlaw, enemy of the realm, planted himself outside the State Board of Cosmetology, invited his customer to join him, and committed the unpardonable sin of performing a manicure without a license granted by the very agents who work inside. The agents didn't remain inside for long. As Mike lifted his sterile tools to work on his client, certain names have been withheld to protect the innocent, a bureaucrat from the all-powerful Board of Cosmetology emerged to hand him a sheet of paper. On the sheet was information explaining why he was in violation of state law, a fact of which Mike was already aware, since he intended to break the law. He had already been spoken to by State Attorney General Kelly Ayotte, now a U.S. Senator, the week before. When Ms. Ayotte asked him not to perform his, quote, stunt, end quote, Mike nicely said he fully intended to provide the service to anyone who was interested in hiring him. When he kept his word, he was promptly arrested by the Concord, New Hampshire police. Mike spent the night in jail because he was unwilling to pay for either the license or the mandatory, quote, training, end quote, required to get it. Instead, he studied and trained himself, advertised to others that he was going to offer his services at a low price, and willingly accepted a customer under the watchful eyes of agents of the Granite State. Call this crazy, but when was a government established to stop us from entering into a peaceful, non-coercive arrangement with someone else? Certain people watching what happened to Mike Fisher recalled that we supposedly formed governments to stop aggressive behavior directed at others. Was Mike Fisher on the attack? Look out! Serial manicurist on the loose! Were those the cries of the people around him? Not at all. They supported his efforts to work free of state interference and to invite others to accept his services for a fee if that was their wish. Mike Fisher was engaged in free enterprise, but evidently that type of activity is unacceptable nowadays. The absurdity of arresting a man for fixing a client's fingernails is obvious, but there are less obvious, though just as important, lessons to be learned about licensing, lessons that can be applied to many other fields of endeavor. Licensing is an act of aggressive exclusion. Such policies supposedly are enacted for the protection of the populace. By creating a government-enforced permission agency, the state protects us, the innocent and uninformed customers out there, from reckless, money-hungry, fly-by-night charlatans who would bilk us of our hard-earned dough while possibly putting our health or property at risk. The trouble, or one of the many troubles, with this assumption is that government licensing does not actually do what it is ostensibly supposed to do. Government agents cannot be everywhere to watch everyone all the time, and thus the threat of license revocation becomes meaningless when a license holder rarely sees a state functionary appear to check on his standards and credentials. Instead, it is the combination of market incentives and punishments that drives entrepreneurs to perform to the best of their abilities. It is the enticement of more profit when one does a good job and the threat of losses when one does not that keep businesses performing at their highest level. Customers enter shops every day and reward businessmen for exemplary performance. Agents of the government do not and cannot. Thus, when it comes to not only keeping a businessman on his best behavior, but also offering him incentives to excel, government coercion is no match for market competition. The second reason government licensing does not actually do what we are told it is designed to do is that we are not told the truth. What licensing is actually designed to do is exclude lower-priced competition, pumping up the incomes of the specially privileged while providing more money to the state in licensing fees. The exclusion of lower-priced competition is a destructive force all its own. It not only represents the suppression of individual choice by the government and those using it to gain a competitive advantage, but it also diverts capital from where consumers would have directed it. Thus, even if a handful of incompetents are stopped by licensing laws each year, the vast majority of consumers in being prevented from shopping among all potential market participants lose far more in opportunity costs than they gain in supposed security. As Melvin D. Barger wrote in The Freeman in April of 1975, quote, "Under today's licensing requirements, Thomas Edison would not have been certified as an engineer, Abraham Lincoln would have been barred from the practice of law, and Albert Einstein could not have been a high school science teacher." End quote. Through licensing, customers lose more than the opportunity to buy services at lower prices, allowing them to have money for other known products and services and expanding already vibrant economies. They also lose the opportunity to discover the myriad products and services that would appear if unlicensed businessmen were allowed to enter the market. When Mike Fisher committed his terrible crime in front of the New Hampshire Board of Cosmetology, he not only represented himself and his own interests, he also represented all the abstract benefits consumers have been unable to acquire in the marketplace because of the absurd notion that the state must give permission for individuals to engage in peaceful commerce. Since there has never been a government anywhere that produced a product or provided a service without first taking from someone against his will, the notion of bureaucrats increasing our capacity to operate an economy is truly laughable. It was not reported if Mike Fisher laughed as they took him away in handcuffs. So that's my piece from 2006 about Mike Fisher, Free State Project. Very cool that he did that. And, of course, it showed the absurdity of licensing laws. And, of course, the aggression of the government. So I appreciate Sheldon Richman again selecting that to go into the magazine in April of 2006. That was really cool of him, and I hope you'll look up some of Sheldon's work. Future Freedom Foundation, Sheldon Richman's books. He's just an amazing guy. You can see videos of him on YouTube that are just incredibly insightful and deserve many, many viewings from not only one individual, but also by many people, if you can spread the word. So thanks very much for listening, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed this program. I know some of the sound quality was kind of funky, but I think it was worthwhile putting this one out there. I want to thank Gerald, and I want to thank Mike for joining me, and you for joining me as well. Talk to you soon. Be seeing you.